Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man with a very important reminder that it's going to be me. Ladies and gentlemen, the captain.
Somebody's got some bad hooch. It's good to be seen and good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today, we are very happy to be featuring Summerfest, refreshing summer lager by the good folks over at Sierra Nevada. This is a fine balance of malt and floral hops with hints of biscuity bread and lemon zest. It's an easygoing ABV of 5%, but it's a seasonal offering. And right now, Summerfest is available to kickstart your warm weather vibes. Garage Grade 4 out of 5 bottle caps. And let's give some thanks and praise to our friends for helping us out this week. First up, a big shout out to Desiree from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And a big We Like Your Jib to Joey D from Norman, Oklahoma.
Next up, a big cheers to Nell from Broomall, Pennsylvania. And last but certainly not least, we have a big Ron Swanson please and thank you that goes out to our new friend of the show, Matt Willer in Parker, Colorado. These fine folks put a few cold ones in the garage fridge for us this week, and for that, we are most grateful.
Yeah, BWERUN, Beer Run. For everything True Crime Garage, check out truecrimegarage.com. And while you're there, sign up on the mailing list. And Colonel, that's enough of the business.
And don't forget, CrimeCon 2024 is coming up in Nashville, Tennessee at the end of May, last weekend of May. If you are looking to get last minute tickets, use our promo code TCG and save 10%. All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. In June of 1985, detectives and sheriff's deputies searched a large ranch property in Wilsleyville, California. This property would be referred to as the death camp by both police and the local media. They were looking for victims here, both alive and evidence of homicide victims. In a shelter located behind the residence, authorities discovered a secret room in the back of the bunker. Posted on the wall was a list of typewritten rules that read, "I must always be ready to service my master. I must be clean, brushed, and made up with my cell neat. I must never speak unless spoken to. Unless in bed, I must never look my master in the eye, but must keep my eyes downcast. I must never show my disrespect, either verbally or silent. I must never cross my arms or legs in front of my body or clench my fist. And unless eating, must always keep lips sealed. I must be obedient completely and in all things. I must obey and without question or comment. I must always be quiet when locked in my cell. I must remember and obey any additional rules told to me. I must understand that disobedience, any pain, trouble, or annoyance caused by me to my master will be grounds for punishment." Outside of the shelter, detectives found a sign that read, "If you love something, set it free. If it doesn't come back, hunt it down and kill it." This is True Crime Garage. This week, we are going to start off this story by going to a tiny little town called Philo, California. Philo is tiny in both total area and people. Philo is just 2 square miles, and as of 2020, the population is just 319 people. Where we pick up this week's true crime story, it's 1982. And I would guess that the population would have been about the same back then. On Thursday, April 29th, 1982, the Federal Bureau of Investigation came to Philo and its roughly 300 residents looking for one guy in particular. And that man was 21-year-old Charles Chitat Ng. But this was not just for a friendly check-in. You know, the old, hey, how are you doing? How's tricks? No, the FBI was there in Philo, SWAT team raid style. This is a guns drawn, kick in your door check-in. They were there to serve a federal fugitive warrant. We got 12 FBI agents dressed in camouflage uniforms and 4 Mendocino County sheriff's deputies surrounding a house at Indian Creek Ranch looking for Charles Ng. He's a federal fugitive from Hawaii. Ng was wanted in connection with the theft of a cache of automatic weapons that he stole from the federal government. The FBI SWAT team captured Charles Ng that day as he attempted to flee out the rear door. No shots were fired. No one was hurt. There were guns found at this location. Ng was taken to Mendocino County Jail and then transported to federal facilities in San Francisco. A second resident was located in the process. This was Leonard Lake. He's age 36 at this time, so he's also arrested. Sheriff's officials said Lake was booked on charges of possession of a machine gun, as well as several weapons with the serial numbers having been removed.
So they come in guns a-blazin'. What else is he wanted for?
Well, the details of his fugitive warrant. He was the mastermind, if we want to call it that, of a large amount of automatic weapons that were stolen from a military base armory in Hawaii. This was back in 1980. At the time, Ng was in the U.S. Marines. Several suspects in this theft were arrested, including Ng. He was facing a court-martial, but Ng escaped custody, and then he went into hiding and made his way to Northern California. When agents caught up with him, Ng was living at this Indian Creek Ranch with Leonard Lake and Lake's wife, who were working as caretakers at this ranch at the time. Now, Captain, I am unsure if Leonard Lake was charged with harboring a fugitive. Lake told officials that Ng was just a friend of his and that he did not know that he was a wanted federal fugitive. But I've reviewed information that states, yes, in fact, Lake was aware that Ng was wanted, and he allowed Ng to move in with him solely because he was wanted and needed to get out of Hawaii.
Right.
This will be a major triggering moment in this week's story. This will have a domino effect for not all, but many of the crimes that we will be discussing here in the garage. Because after the raid, Leonard Lake was released on bond, but then he jumps bail. So he decided then and there that he would live his life on the run. Strange situation. He's harboring a fugitive. And during the bust, when they pick up Ng, they bring Leonard Lake up on several weapons charges. And once he makes the bond, he jumps bail. He decides to then become a fugitive himself. He decided that he would hide out and live his life on the run. He's not like this doesn't seem like the most brilliant of maneuvers here, but it seemed to have worked. So he decides he's going to move out and hide out in this remote cabin that was owned by his wife. Her name is Clarilyn Balazs. It was actually owned by her parents. So this is in Wilsleyville, which is a community in Calaveras County, California, located in the foothills of Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, it's very remote.
So Ng was sent off to Marine custody, as we would expect. He pled guilty to the charges. He pled guilty to fleeing. And under the terms of that plea deal, he was paroled and dishonorably discharged, but this will not take place until 1984, after Ng serves 18 months in the military stockade at the U.S. Disciplinary Barracks in Leavenworth. Once he's released, he will then join back up with his buddy Leonard Lake, again in Northern California.
Back to the cabin.
Let's fill in the blanks here on who these guys are and what happens between the time of this 1982 raid and 1984 when the two meet up again. So these two are real monsters, both unique from each other, but a lot of similarities as well, as I think that we will see as we venture along here.
Right.
Charles Ng was born and raised for many years in British Hong Kong before moving to the States and then joining the U.S. Marines. He was a Bruce Lee wannabe type. He also had fantasies of running organized robbery, weapons, and bank heist, this type of illegal operations similar to the one that he got busted for. To put it in its simplest of forms, he basically wanted to get a group of military types together, organize them, and mastermind plots to steal and rob weapons from military bases, U.S. military bases, and then sell the guns for large sums of money and carry out violent group bank robberies as well. Kind of like forming an A-team, but for bad guys. High risk, highly profitable, illegal operations. Charles Ng wanted to be like the Hans Gruber, but he and his recruits get busted on their first go-round. Leonard Lake, he's about 18 years older than Charles Ng. Lake called Ng Charlie most of the time. As we said, Lake was married. This is to Clarilyn Blaws. Now, after the raid on the house, and once Leonard decided that he was cool with being a fugitive, the two of them made it official to split up. They separated and they made it official with a divorce. What it looks to me, Captain, and plenty of evidence to back this up, is that while there was this divorce, this was not a complete break, because it very much turned into a friends with benefits type situation.
It was basically, let's get a divorce, but we're going to still be in a relationship together. So we're just separated on paper.
Separated on paper, but also separated for, I wouldn't say all of the time, but most of the time, right? Like, so from my understanding, the way that this panned out is the two would continue to carry on a sexual and romantic relationship. Leonard Lake is, again, living at this, hiding out at this cabin that belongs to Clarilyn's parents, even after they separate. She would often spend like the weekends there with him, or may go out there for a couple of weeks at a time. But the deal that they kind of had was Clarilyn didn't want to live her life on the run.
Right.
Leonard Lake thought that she was far too young. She was much younger than he was. He thought that she was far too young and had too much left of her life in front of her, that she didn't need to get all wrapped up into his troubles with the law, right? Because if they find him and her together, she's likely going to be facing all kinds of charges, similar to what happened to him when he was hosting Charles Ng.
Yeah, so basically it seems like this guy was intent on living a life of crime, or living his life however he wanted to, and if that involved crime, so be it. But if they come to get me, I'm not coming willingly.
You nailed it. That's exactly what it appears that he wished to do. So the two of them, they struck up this kind of deal. They were still going to be friends with benefits, and Leonard Lake would be hiding out, and hopefully for him and for Clarilyn, she would remain beyond the reach of the law because she's not tethered to him.
Well, and this is almost a perfect hiding out spot, because has a very long driveway. It's gated. So if somebody's coming to try to find Leonard, he would have a heads up to get your stuff, get out of the house, hide in the woods for about an hour, and then once they leave, you go back to the property.
It's a little surprising to me, and I think it will be to the listeners as well, as we continue on here, because I feel like if they were really looking for Leonard Lake, if they were really concerned about him, that he's like 2 degrees from his ex-wife.
Right.
It wouldn't be very difficult. It wouldn't take the world's greatest detective to track this man down.
And law enforcement is probably not going to be open and honest about this, but I wonder how many times they went out to this property to look for him and were just bamboozled because, like I said, he could go hide out somewhere for a while and then come back when they're gone.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree on that. The only issue, though, I don't think they were actually even looking for him. There's indicators from law enforcement that they didn't consider him to be a priority fugitive,
right?
While Leonard Lake thought that he was. And so he thinks he's on the run, needs to live in hiding. But the truth is, the people he's running and hiding from, they're not really looking for him.
Yeah, he's playing a solo game of hide and seek.
Leonard Lake would go on to be just about every type of criminal that one can think of. Like the captain said, he's decided that this is now going to be his lifestyle. And if he has to commit crimes to provide for himself, for his own survival, then so be it. He will. So he will go on to commit every kind of crime that one can think of. So before we get into the really bad stuff, this guy was already into extortion, theft, and he was very much a con man and attempting to commit cons on the regular. He had a few very unhealthy obsessions as well. He was obsessed with the idea of possessing slaves, and he was obsessed with making pornography. This through photography, filming, and producing pornography. He liked to make pornography for several reasons. He was building his own personal collection, but he would also use the materials he created for extortion purposes. He called this sex cons. Today, we see and hear words like sextortion. We have seen this type of disgusting behavior and bullying, frankly, from pedophiles, online predators, and even high school students. And this is typically where he would get someone to commit to being involved and agree to being involved in either photographs or actual filming of pornography, and then later use it to extort them for multiple reasons. It could be to force them into sex acts later, or to extort money from them. He used this for all kinds of different purposes. And in fact, I've reviewed plenty of cases, especially in the 70s, where pedophiles would use this type of tactic, where they would pay or give alcohol and maybe even marijuana to teenage boys to take photographs of them, and then later threaten to show those pictures to their parents and get them to do things that they otherwise would not be willing to do. And that's exactly what online predators are doing, and even high school students are doing these days with their cell phones and persons that they meet on the internet.
And anybody following the news right now, this is some of the stuff that they're claiming, going after Puff Daddy about.
Now, as difficult as it may seem, I actually believe that Leonard Lake, as big of a hypocrite and a monster that he was, I do believe that he was capable of some form of love. Maybe not as we, the normal folks, would know it or understand love to be, but I do believe that he did love Clarilyn Balazs. And I also think that he loved the book, The Collector. The Collector is a 1963 psychological thriller novel by John Fowles. Some have even called it horror fiction. It's a rather brilliant book. Its plot follows a lonely young man who kidnaps a female art student in London. Her name in the book is Miranda. The man holds Miranda captive in the cellar of his rural farmhouse. Leonard Lake discovers this book as a young man and will read it several times during his lifetime. Remember, it is very evident that for much of Leonard's life, he is obsessed with the idea of possessing slaves. These slaves, both for the purpose of performing work, task, and job duties, but also to possess sex slaves. A woman to have whenever he desires, to do whatever he desires, and then put her away for later. I think this is, in a way, how and why Leonard Lake got involved with Charles Ng. So the way that these two meet, and their law enforcement has spent a good deal of time trying to figure this out, exactly when, where, and how the two of them met. Because remember, right, Leonard Lake is in California, and he's been out of the military for quite some time. Charles Ng is on the run from the military, who he organized these guys, this group of guys, to get together and steal automatic guns from the U.S. government. It sounds like another person retired from the military connected the two. That Charles Ng was on the run, stayed with this retired sergeant who then put him in touch with Leonard Lake, and then he went to California and was hiding out there with Lake. It's believed that there was some kind of classified ad that was placed in one of those Soldier of Fortune or survivalist type magazines that Lake may have responded to. And that's how this whole relationship started. Now, the reason why I say that I think that this is why Lake got involved with Ng is that once Ng was staying with him, he knows the situation. He knows this guy is on the run, and so he is making him work for free. He's basically working for room and board,
right,
and doing all these jobs and things for Leonard Lake so that he has a place to hide out.
Well, and like you said, Leonard was in the army, served during Vietnam, and was discharged, I believe, diagnosed with schizophrenia. Leonard Lake thought very highly of himself, thought he was this genius, thought if there was an apocalypse, he would be the only person to survive and that he would have to seed the rest of the world. And in a way, this is how Charles kind of thought of himself.
Lake was born in San Francisco, and in 1964, after high school, he enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. He served two tours of duty in Vietnam. After a delusional breakdown, he was diagnosed with schizoid personality disorder, and then later he receives a medical discharge from the Marine Corps. This is in 1971. Now, back to the 80s. I had said earlier that this raid that led to Leonard Lake's wanted status would have a domino effect. Well, it most certainly did, in part because Leonard Lake needed to survive. He needed an income. He needed transportation. He needed a place to live. Well, some of that meant that he needed a different identity. So Lake, from that day on, was always on the lookout for how to make money, how to have a steady income, and how to steal an identity and use that identity of someone else that he could pass for. Cars were always a thing that he was on the lookout for as well. So now we have to introduce Leonard's brother. His name, Donald Lake. Donald Lake is about 5 years younger than Leonard. This will take us to December of 1982, Captain. So at this time, Donald Lake is about 32 at this point.
Unfortunately, Donald suffered from a disability due to an accident when he was hit by a train as a kid. So he suffered mental problems. Leonard did not like his brother. The accident and subsequent disability required Donald to be taken care of almost around the clock. Leonard's parents were already separated when this accident took place. So now we have a single mom with an absent father and an additional needs child. Well, in this situation, this meant that Leonard was sent off to be raised by his grandparents. When married, Leonard told his wife that his brother was a leech and that his brother did not deserve to live. In December of 1982, Donald was living with his mother. This is in San Fran. Leonard, pretending to be a good brother, offered to take Donald on a road trip. This for a house-sitting job that Leonard was scheduled for. Leonard picked up Donald on the way, and then all of a sudden, Donald was never seen again. So the family reports Donald is missing with the police. Then a letter arrives at Mom's house. It's from Donald, saying that he no longer wished to live with his mother, and that he had decided to move to Reno, Nevada. And he had made arrangements for his monthly disability checks to be sent to him at his new address. The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey, a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story. It takes you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. You'll step into the role of June Parker and search for hidden clues to uncover the mystery of her sister's murder. Use your observation skills to quickly uncover key pieces of information that lead to chapters of mystery, danger, and romance. And customize your very own luxurious estate island. Think expansive gardens and beautiful buildings. Collect scraps of information to fill your photo album and learn more about each character. And you can chat and play with or against other players by joining a detective club. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As your kids get older, some things about parenting get easier, but some things get harder. Like conversations about money. Kids just won't know how to manage money until they're in charge of it. That's where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, building their money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun, accessible way. The Greenlight app also includes a chores feature where you can set up one-time or reoccurring chores, customize to your family's needs, and reward kids for a job well done. Greenlight is very cool, and it's a new learning experience that you can provide for your responsible child. I have several friends who have rewarded their children with a Greenlight debit card. Now, they are having conversations about spending, but more importantly, about saving money to reach their goals. Greenlight is an easy and convenient way to teach your kids responsible habits. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/garage. That's greenlight.com/garage to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/garage.
All right, we are back. Cheers, mates. Tall cans in the air. Cheers to you, Colonel.
Cheers to you, Captain. This brings us to something that is called Operation Fish. And the way that this works here, Captain, is in May of 1983, Mr. Leonard Lake moved in with his friend Charles Gunner. Charles is 36 at this time. From the outside looking in, my guess, Captain, is that most people would believe that Charles Gunner was Leonard Lake's best friend. I would go as far as to wager a Franklin that Gunner believed himself to be Leonard Lake's best friend. Gunner, like Lake, had a military background. Charles Gunner had retired from the Navy. Gunner was the best man at Lake's wedding back in 1981. They both shared an interest in survival skills, guns, and collecting other types of weapons. So these two had known each other pretty well for years. When they were married, they knew each other's wives. They spent time together. Lake spent time with Gunner's family and knew his two kid daughters as well. On May 22nd, the two took a road trip to Las Vegas, or maybe it was to Tahoe. Leonard Lake would tell people different locations, both before and after the trip. Gunner was recently divorced from his wife, and he was the primary caregiver for his two daughters. The daughters did not go on this trip. This was to be a guy's road trip. Two old buddies, both single, hitting the road in Gunner's van. After the two were gone for a few days, Leonard Lake came cruising back into town, but he's alone, and he's in Gunner's van. Lake tells everyone that while they were on their trip, that his good buddy fell in love and ran off with some woman that he had just met. Lake said that he didn't know how anyone could get in touch with Gunner, but he was sure that eventually Gunner would return, either to be with or to collect his two daughters. And what we now know, Captain, is that Charles Gunner was never seen again.
No, which makes two people that left with Lake never came back.
Now, a little reminder here, Charles Ng is locked up during all of this. He is serving his time in Kansas. Leonard Lake is living in this Wilsleyville, which is an unincorporated community in Calaveras County, California. It's not until after Charles is released in 1984 that the two meet up again. By the time that Charles Ng finds his way back to now the fugitive living on the run, Leonard Lake, Lake is living alone. He's using the name Charles Gunner, and he has constructed a survival bunker directly behind his house. Now, we're going to say neighbors here, Captain, but as you know, and you've described some of this area where he's living, the neighbors are few and far between, to put it simple and short. But the neighbors that he has interaction with, these neighbors were told that, again, this is Leonard Lake, a.k.a. Charles Gunner. He's using this name, and that's how all of his neighbors know him to be, Charles Gunner. He tells the neighbors that this building is kind of a just in case. It's like an emergency plan for the end times. Times that Lake believed were coming sooner rather than later. And that was true. Not that end times were upon us, but that the bunker was built as an emergency survival bunker. But according to Lake and what he would tell to Charles Ng when he gets there, that this bunker had another use and a more immediate purpose. And that purpose, Leonard Lake told Charles, was something that Lake called Operation Miranda. Unfortunately, this remote area will afford these two the privacy they needed and desired. These two guys, they spent the next year stealing from their neighbors. What they would do is they had these different sheds or cabins, whatever you want to call them. Most sources call them cabins, but these are very small structures where one might spend a night or a weekend or a couple of nights. This is not somewhere where one would live. Somebody might go there and rent the place or do a favor or work the land for a little bit and get the opportunity to stay there briefly.
Yeah, this wasn't like a resort. If you'd see these structures, you'd consider that you're going out to the woods to rough it.
It's like thousands of acres, I believe. And we're talking about a large sprawling ranch. Anybody that's seen Yellowstone knows what we're kind of talking about. A very large plot of land, except for those big, beautiful cabins that you see on the show Yellowstone. We don't have any big, beautiful cabins or mansion type houses on this acreage right here. We have these smaller houses, and then we also have these sheds or cabins, as they were called. Now, from my understanding, Captain, a lot of these cabins, the small ones that I'm talking about, were up in elevated land, like they're in the foothills, but these are elevated. What I think that Leonard Lake was doing is I think he was going up there, positioning himself inside one of these cabins so he can kind of spy on the neighbors who all live down below. And from this vantage point, from some of these vantage points, he could look into their houses where these persons lived long term, either renters or maybe even they had purchased the structure. But what this gave him the ability to do, because this area is so remote, we're not talking about having to kick in a door or break a window to get into these people's homes where they live. He would often just watch and wait. And when he could see that no one was there, sneak in a back door, maybe a side door, and steal valuables from these dwellings. Now, of course, everybody knows that this is going on, but nobody knows who's doing it. And in conversation with the other neighbors, Lake is telling them he's experiencing the same problems.
I'm a victim as well.
Exactly. He's a victim as well. The other thing that this remote area and his living situation affords him, unfortunately, and we know this on a couple of occasions, that Lake and Ng lured people, men and at least one woman that we could find, to the cabin, to there where they lived, with the promise of work. Like, hey, we own this ranch. We're working this ranch. We're the caretakers here. We're also working the land. A couple of these people were told that Lake was running a pot farm, that he needed persons to come out and help work this pot farm. Like in one situation, one man arrives. He goes out there thinking he's got a job, showing up for work. And instead, he finds Lake and Ng, who end up robbing him and then killing the man.
Right.
Then there was the Dobbs family. We have husband and father. His name is Harvey Dubbs. He was age 29 at the time. He placed an advertisement in a newspaper. And unfortunately, that listing caught the eye of a one Leonard Lake. Harvey Dubbs was selling some video equipment. Lake needs some video equipment for his Miranda operation.
I don't know if it was that he was selling it because he was also known to rent the equipment out to people.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a possibility. The information I have was that it was a listing for this equipment to be sold. But regardless, this is what's going to put Lake in contact with Harvey Dubbs.
Right.
So on July 25th, Harvey's wife, Deborah, she's talking on the telephone to a friend. During this conversation, the doorbell rings at their apartment. Deborah tells her friend on the other end, "Hey, I gotta go. I gotta hop off the phone here. There's two men who are interested in the items that are listed, and they've arrived." So she hops off the phone. Now, the Dubs family, they're living in an apartment building. They regularly spoke with and kept in contact with their neighbors, in particular, their downstairs neighbor. So we have other people living in this building. The neighbors, after a while, start to notice that at some point in late July, the young couple with the little baby boy that they were, you know, regularly seen going in and out of their apartment, they were no longer seen.
Right.
Instead, more than one neighbor noticed an Asian man going in and out of the young couple's apartment.
Yeah, there's multiple witnesses seeing men going in and out of the property carrying items, and they were able to give descriptions to police.
Then in another strange turn of events, Harvey Dubbs' work receives a strange phone call from a man who identified himself as James Bright. This Mr. Bright told Harvey's employer that Harvey Dubbs had to go to Washington State for a family emergency and he may not be back anytime soon. So this family of three vanished, including the one-year-old Sean Dubbs. It's believed that Lake and Ng likely used the baby to control the parents. That once they got into the apartment, under the ruse that they were there to look at the video equipment, either for the purpose of renting or purchasing, that no, that's not what they were there to do. They were there to do much worse, include stealing said video equipment. But the thought here is that they used the little one to control the parents and then move the parents and the family as they pleased.
And so obviously you have people reporting this family missing. Law enforcement gets involved. They're going to do a search of the property. And they know, hey, the last person to talk with anybody in this family, she was mentioning these guys were coming over to look at this video equipment, very expensive video equipment. And guess what? The video equipment's gone. And they also found some phone wire that was tied to a door handle. And they started thinking, well, maybe they tied an individual up as they're controlling the other members of the family. So right away, the law enforcement wasn't just thinking that this family disappeared into thin air. Pretty quickly, law enforcement was onto the idea that something bad probably happened to this family, and it probably involved this camera equipment.
And the thing that is terrible here for all involved, the law enforcement and the neighbors and the family, the only leads that they really have is, like you said there, Captain, we have the neighbors who witnessed an Asian man going in and out of the apartment on several occasions. There's at least one eyewitness that spots the Asian man getting into a vehicle. I believe it was some kind of Volkswagen. And she's able to provide a description of the driver to law enforcement, where she says it's a Caucasian male with a dark beard, a balding Caucasian male with a dark black beard. Really, all they have to work off of, law enforcement, is this description of these two men. They're, and I hate to paint this horrible picture here, but police are really trying to dissect this situation and trying to figure out exactly the movements of everyone, because the problem becomes in this situation at this scene is how the hell would these men have got a family of three out of this populated apartment building without being seen? Nobody saw anybody in the family leave that property. And so the thought was there was at least one witness that had seen the Asian man leaving the apartment carrying a large suitcase. There are some that think that possibly, like you had said, at some point, someone's tied up with that telephone cord in the apartment. They think that maybe the small child was moved outside to a vehicle. And then with that threat already in place, the remaining abductor who's still in the apartment with the parents was able to control them in that manner and to get them to move quietly out to the car. They think that this took place overnight because of the time period of when the male is seen leaving the apartment with the large suitcase. And we do know that Leonard Lake, based off of what we've already discussed and things that we will go through as we continue on here, he's a weapons fanatic. We know he, and so is Charles Ng. So no doubt they likely used a gun in the scenario, but it's good to have a clear understanding that this apartment building was populated as such that they're not finding evidence other than that telephone cord that any kind of major scuffle took place inside this apartment. They're not finding any evidence that anybody was killed inside this apartment. So what everything is suggesting to law enforcement and investigators at the time is that somehow somebody was able to successfully move these individuals out of the apartment and also move any items that they desired to steal from the apartment.
Yeah, well, you have two individuals, both military background, both weapon experts, both criminal experts, because they don't do just one crime. They do any crime that gets them from point A to point B. Whatever they're trying to do in their life, if there's a crime that can get them there, they will do it. And so I think what they did was, like you said, if we can get to the child, we can control the situation. And maybe they thought, doesn't matter if there is a child or not, if we can get to one of the members in the family, we can control the situation. And the ruse probably was simply, hey, this is a robbery. We're only after camera equipment. This is how the crime is going to go down, and you will do what we say. And if you do what we say, nobody gets hurt. We're only after the camera equipment.
That's right. We got the kid in the car. We're just all going to go for a ride. We just need to get all of you out of the apartment, and then the three of you will be safe. We'll drop you off somewhere. Again, it's a situation where, yeah, we know Charles Ng is really into this high risk type of behavior and crimes, but at the same time, this is not the type of apartment building where we can have gunshots going off without anybody noticing. In fact, there were a couple of people that lived near this young couple that said, we think that they went missing on this date because we live so close to one another. You can often hear each other through the walls or through the floors. Right. And we stopped hearing this very active young family on this date. And that's when police and detectives are going, this is on the same date that Deborah's on the phone with a friend and says she's got to hang up. There's some people at the door that are here to look at this video equipment. That's July 25th. Make sure you come back to the garage for part two. Until then, be good, be kind, and don't litter.